You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Guess what? We've started. I'm Morgan Avery, and that's Dylan Reeve.
Sorry, am I not interrupting you now?
You're not interrupting now. We can. Did you enjoy it last week when we had a tech podcast?
Me?
Yeah.
Did we?
Yeah.
I wasn't really paying attention.
Are you recording, by the way?
Wait, were you there the last week?
I kind of go into a fugue state when we make the show, so typically I don't remember what happened.
Yeah, this week we're going to have a tech podcast again because Ben's here, but we're not going to talk to him for a minute. First, I want to talk about what women can be. How about that? Is that a broad enough subject?
Okay, they can be police women. They could be nurses. Is this what we're talking about? That sort of thing?
Yeah, women. Actually, the Stuff article says that girls can be colossal squid.
What?
Oh, cool.
Yeah, apparently.
No one told me that as a child.
Tupapa's, they've just examined another.
Well, you can be whatever you
colossal
want,
squid, and it's a female. Apparently, that's news. Would you know?
It's not so much girls can be colossal squid, but more that colossal squid can be girls.
Details. Apparently, one thing that you can't do if you're a woman is kiss your white boyfriend if you're black, because the police will literally handcuff you and they will accuse you of being a prostitute.
There is slightly more information that apparently the report they received was that there was lewd behavior going on in a car before the public kissing.
A black woman kissing a white man.
No, but it was the lewd behavior.
Yeah, that, we're meant to read something into that. That's what the LAPD is saying to cover their ass.
Hand shandy in the car.
Yeah, all right. The most amazing thing that's just been announced is women possibly are going to be able to be US Army Elite Special Forces Rangers. They're opening, they've set out a call for female volunteers.
You know,
to go
there's a reality
through the
show in the making on this, right? It's bound to be a reality show.
I hope not. Women, though, not allowed to play computer games. Turns out. And women in computer games, not allowed to be people. But the thing is that women make games, women program games, they design games, they write the stories that, you know, you play through, and games, that good games anyway, they make graphics for games. Turns out they actually play games, which, you know, that would come as a shock for some male computer game players, apparently. In fact, according to stats that I'm just going to pull straight out of the air, that this was from a study commissioned by the Entertainment Software Association, women actually are the largest demographic group of computer game players. 37% of computer game players are adult women.
Yeah, The Sims is very popular.
That's more than, well, all sorts of games are very popular.
I know. So
they're not just casuals. You hater. So 37% of computer
I'm a casual.
37% of computer game players are adult women. Only 36% are adult men. How many are teenage boys? 17%.
Oh, I was going to say 17.
So why do some people find it so confronting to suggest that perhaps women shouldn't be treated as victims or furniture or window dressing?
Can I offer a suggestion?
No.
Oh.
This is a monologue. This is a monologue, motherfucker.
There's a lot of rhetorical questions.
Yes. Shut up.
I didn't realize they were rhetorical.
Shut up.
Until you told me
no,
I couldn't
shut up.
Talk.
No, that's enough. I've heard enough from you.
Yeah.
Dylan's will be seen and not heard, and this is a podcast, so you won't be seen.
Okay.
So why do some of the people that have a problem with that, mainly adult men, from what I can see, react with such hostility to anyone who dares espouse the view that women are people and women in games should be treated as people? We've spoken a little bit about Anita Sarkeesian before and her feminist frequency project and the female tropes in computer games. I can't actually remember the correct name of the long-running, ongoing YouTube series. Massive, crazy, insane backlash against Anita. Threats of rape, threats of murder. Many, many, many times over. When we spoke about it before, though, no weird backlash. So I'm going to assume that this isn't controversial for our listeners anyway. Anyway, we're joined today by Siobhan Keogh, games writer for the New Zealand Herald.
Hi, how are you?
I'm really
and
good
a woman.
Because I'm a white man and the whole world is
everybody loves you.
Well, they don't need to love me.
They just need
I
to
love
obey.
Me. I love me. Another white man love me. So that's probably enough. So here's a tweet. I want to talk to you about games, but I also want to talk to you about the Gamergate thing.
Yep.
And this other
sure.
stuff. So you will have heard of Phil Fish, the creator of Fez.
Yes, poor Phil Fish.
So he disappeared off Twitter and deleted his account, and a Phil Fish now exists on Twitter. It's not a verified account. It might be Phil, though. So he's widely disliked for daring to have opinions, basically.
Yeah, he's very, very opinionated about games in the industry and the place of minorities in it.
Yeah. So from the 13th of this month, here is a tweet from Phil Fish. I'm sick of all these motherfucking death threats from these anti-feminist fucks.
Yep, seems fair.
It does seem fair, doesn't it? It seems like actually a non-crazy opinion to hold.
That's a pretty ridiculous opinion.
Anita Sarkeesian spoke at the XOXO Festival. I don't know how I'm meant to pronounce that. Kiss hug, kiss hug.
I'm sure. I would say XOXO.
I think our listeners will dislike me making kissing noises into
we
the
could
phone.
We could probably talk to Ben Brown and find out how he's supposed to pronounce it.
I don't know how you make a hug noise anyway.
Mwah.
No, that's a kiss noise still.
That's still kissing, yeah.
I guess it is sort of a mwah. I didn't think that through properly.
If I can just hug my microphone, is that? It's not really.
So
it'll be unpleasant.
Gamergate. Yeah. Is it's actually quite specifically about Zoe Quinn, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think it started out specifically about Zoe Quinn, but now it's kind of evolved into this really weird beast where no one actually knows anymore what they're fighting for. Yeah, it started out about this game developer, indie game developer Zoe Quinn, whose boyfriend posted this massive tirade about essentially accusing her of having had affairs during their relationship. And one of those people that she allegedly had an affair with was this guy, Nathan Grayson, who is a journalist for Kotaku, which is quite a popular games journalism website. Mm. So, funnily enough, despite the fact that this guy, Nathan Grayson, never actually wrote about Depression Quest, the game that she created, and despite the fact that he is the one who was ethically obliged to behave in this situation because he's a journalist, she kind of got dumped on in a big way because of the fact that she had sexuality. She never said whether any of this stuff actually happened, but as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't matter. And the weird slut-shaming and stuff that's happened is really quite bizarre. But no one was mad at the guy who they were accusing of doing the unethical thing that he didn't actually do.
Mm.
They were only mad at her, which kind of, to me, speaks to the fact that it's more about misogyny than about any other issue.
Yeah.
But it's kind of expanded. So you talked about Anita Sarkeesian, and she, around the same time, or at least a little bit after this first started to blow up, she released a video on the violence against women in video games. Mm. But more specifically, it focused a lot on sexual violence. And it was quite disturbing to watch. I watched the whole thing from start to finish. And it's weird when you see this stuff in a context of a game and you don't necessarily think that much of it. And then you see it all lined up one after the other. And you go, actually, no, this is really fucked up and not okay. Mm. Or at least that's the reaction I have. But that's apparently not the reaction that some other people have because they seem to get off on it. It's really gross and bizarre. So around the same time she released this video, and people flipped their shit. There were people, yeah, you were saying rape threats and murder threats. She had to leave her home because people were threatening to bomb her house and light it on fire and all of that kind of stuff. Mm. It wasn't just her. They started picking on her family. They somehow got a hold of her father's phone number and were having people call her father. Similar thing happened to Zoe Quinn. So it's really quite disgusting. And so there are these other factions, though, sort of within this Gamergate thing that are going, but actually what we want is an improvement of ethics in game journalism. And I kind of think, okay, I can understand where you're coming from there. However, who are you aligning yourselves with? Because you really need to think about what people outside of this little Twitter battle think of the people that you're associating with.
Mm.
Because it does reflect badly on you regardless of which kind of group you fall into, whether you're one of the crazies or one of the people who's like, I just don't like the relationship between PR and games journalists. Like, that's acceptable, an acceptable criticism, but you're aligning yourself with people who are abusive, who are actually committing crimes, who are threatening to kill people. That's really revolting.
And threatening to kill people for just the most insanely trivial stuff. I haven't watched the most recent tropes, female tropes in video games video, but all of the others are pretty much just, here are the facts. These are things that happen. And
yeah.
I don't understand what is to be negative about. I mean, I would have thought that like the only remotely sensible response is, okay, that was the history. That's unfortunate, but let's move forward and do a better job. And instead the response is, stay away from my my fucking games. How dare you? You're trying to cut off my dick and balls. And it's like, no, none of that's trying to happen. No one's trying to ruin your games.
Yeah, exactly.
They're trying to unruin games for women.
Totally. And this is the thing. I mean, I actually, there's this journalist, Lee Alexander, who she's a female journalist working in America.
How dare she?
She writes for Gamer Sutra. Right. And she basically said in this this other podcast, which we won't talk about because other podcasts don't exist, no one's trying to take away your toys. Yeah. No one's coming to take away your toys. Like, there's always going to be these masculine shooty shooty bang bang games, and I'm actually totally supportive of that. I like those games. I'm a huge fan of Halo, and I've just reviewed Destiny for Game Planet, and you know, all kinds
don't
of
be
stuff.
Ridiculous. You say you're a fan of Halo, but what you mean is you're a fan of sitting on the couch next to your boyfriend and watching him play.
While playing Candy Crush on your cell phone.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely only play games on my smartphone. And
you filthy casual.
Every time, you know what the worst thing is? Every time, I put it out there quite openly all the time, but I'm a massive fan of The Sims. So when you mentioned it earlier, I was like, oh, damn it.
Hey, hold on a second here. I'm a huge fan of The Sims as well, but okay, I just like to change the wallpaper and carpet. I just like to mess around with all that stuff.
I just like to...
Do you do that thing where you get them in a room and then remove the door?
No.
I think I used to do that back in the day, but like it became, I mean, that's like a thing that you do when you first get a new Sims game, right? And you play around with it, and then that gets boring and you actually play.
Oh no, that lasted me months.
I never get that far. So the weird thing, I had no idea this was happening until a friend of mine, Andrew Todd, who's the gaming editor for Badass Digest, wrote.
Yes, I read that story.
He wrote a big long article about it, and among other things, he highlighted these two guys whose names are Jordan Owen and Davis Alurini, I don't know, who are crowdfunding to make a documentary film that will, quote, explore how gaming and tech culture has been hijacked by social justice warriors, as well as look into the background, ethics, and methodology of some movements of the most prominent voices. The title is a reference to Anna Sarkeesian. The film is called The Sarkeesian Effect. Like it's horrific. They are making a film to encapsulate their fuckwit side of the argument.
You know what, like, I find the most crazy about that, every little bit of the last spiel that you said, is the fact that they're talking about social justice warriors as if that's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
As if that's a horrible thing to be. I mean, if you put those words together.
Can I read their description for it then?
Sure.
What is a social justice warrior, says their page? The term social justice warrior, SJW, they abbreviate it further on, came about as a pejorative term to refer to a person who berates other internet users over matters of political correctness, but has since evolved into a specific movement within the tech industry and gaming culture that's based around professional victimhood, intimidation, and the proliferation of falsehoods. That's what a social justice warrior is.
Proliferation of falsehoods, okay.
And professional victimhood.
Yeah.
I'm a professional victim. No one stops me from being so goddamn fat.
You know what? I have this problem.
How dare they not?
But also, on the other hand, you better accept my fatness.
There are people on the internet who are just fuckwits, and I'm getting less tolerant of it, because the other thing that happens, I notice, is like I go on Reddit and I browse, you know, our videos, and sometimes look at the funny YouTube videos, and the ones that get popular there, you go to the YouTube page and it's just full of fucking assholes making ridiculous trolling comments. Yeah. And it's horrible, and it's just like, I don't want to have any part of these fuckwits.
Yeah, and God forbid there's like a woman or a black person or a gay person in that video, then all bets are off.
Why are there such assholes on the internet? Is it the anonymity? Can we just make everyone put a real photo and name there? That was what Google Plus was going to do, wasn't it? Let's stop them being fuckwits.
Well, the reputation, I don't think
thing.
So.
Well, it won't if the theory that a bunch of 4chan tools are behind kind of stoking the fires of this whole Gamergate thing, which according to
totally
some
are.
Chat logs that have been published, they are, and they were quite open in their little IRC chat rooms about how, you know, they had a bunch of sock puppets adding to the debate, the bile, and trying to, you know, get it trending. And, you know, it doesn't take all that many people and a concerted effort to make something seem like much more of a big deal than it, you know, should ever be considered.
They fairly regularly post a list of their cancers, living cancers, which number one on the list is Anna Sarkeesian's, followed by Zoe Quinn, and then a bunch
Anita.
Of other people.
Yeah.
Sorry, Anita Sarkeesian. And then the corporate cancers also are Gawker, Kotaku, Rock, Paper, Scissors, Polygon.
Yeah, I've seen, like, okay, I've seen so that's... many lists, and I am only disappointed that I'm not on one of them.
Oh, we could probably try. But the best thing is, like, if your corporate cancers are pretty much every major gaming publication, then maybe they're not the cancer.
Yeah. There was a guy who also did some maths, and he essentially calculated, he took all of the major games websites, and he calculated how often one of the articles talked about feminism, misogyny, rape, those kinds of issues that social justice warriors are up in arms about. And he basically discovered that 0.4% of the articles on these websites were about these issues. So these people who are going, oh, feminists are coming to take away our games, are ignoring the fact that these so-called social justice warriors spend 99% of their time talking about doing this sort of games enthusiast stuff. Mm. And then they spend 0.04% of their time talking about social issues, and that is unacceptable. I don't understand.
So it's 99.6% fandom.
Yeah, I mean, it's not 99.6% fandom, but there's very little in terms of the sort of social critical examination compared to what people actually think. I think it's just that these guys get so irritated when they see a story that doesn't align with their viewpoint. So they go, oh, feminists are everywhere in gaming and trying to take away my games and whatever, when in actual fact the statistics don't back that up.
I really hate it when people don't agree with my viewpoint.
I think everyone does.
Morgan really hates it.
So I want to talk about games, but first I will my last thing about Gamergate, and this is a Medium post about the Steel Man, and this is not actually a rhetorical thing. It's not a concept I'd heard of before. Everyone of course has heard of the Straw Man, and this is arguing against an argument that another person hasn't actually made, or the weakest form of their argument.
Yeah, you paraphrase their argument to something you can easily destroy.
Yeah. So this is the idea of the Steel Man, which is, even if a person that you're arguing with is not arguing very well, what you do is try and figure out the best version of their argument. Not what they can come up with, but what like the smartest person in the room can come up with. And then you see if you can defeat that argument, right? So it's not just about one fucking idiot. And it's not just about being dismissive, because you have to start off by saying, this is what I believe your argument is. And then you express the strongest form of it, and then you break it, you destroy it. And it's in the show notes. I'm not going to read the whole bloody thing, even with Dylan's excellent narration voice. But I strongly recommend everyone read this. It's The Steel Man of Gamergate, if you can't be bothered looking at the show notes. You'll be able to find that on Medium. It's a fantastic article.
I will go and have a look.
Yeah. It's a great idea.
I might use that Steel Man concept the next time I'm arguing with 9/11 truthers, and then I will destroy that Steel Man with fire over a prolonged period of time. Get fuel fire.
How often do you argue with 9/11 truthers?
I don't want to talk about it.
more often than you might think. Jesus.
Much more often than I should.
All right, so I want to talk about games, but first I'm going to very briefly mention. So I saw this headline on Stuff: US military to lead Ebola fight.
Oh.
I wonder if what they mean is they're going to take Ebola and introduce it into Syria.
I just like the idea of them going out with guns trying to fight Ebola. Yeah. Not the people who have Ebola, but Ebola
just shoot each bacterium.
Yes, individually.
We're going to need more guns.
Smaller guns.
We need tiny guns.
What if they... No, that wouldn't work. I was going to say, what if they put hypodermic needles in their guns to shoot, but there is no vaccine, so that won't work. Shoot everyone with vaccine.
Yeah.
That's just silly.
I'm sorry.
Taking it too far.
I know. What's wrong with me?
The biggest gaming news of this week is Microsoft buying Minecraft. Minecraft.
Yeah.
$2.5 billion.
It seems like so much.
They acquired Mojang. And Notch is like, thanks for the money. See ya.
Well, can you blame him?
I can't blame him, but apparently he's really strongly disliked working for his own company for quite a while. He posted on his site, what is it? Is it notch.com? Something like that.
Yeah.
Listen, I hate the role that I've been in. I do not want to be a leader. I just want to work on silly little projects. And he's actually said that he's going to continue working on silly little projects, but any project that gets too much success, he's going to abandon.
So he's just going to, I mean, that's a real entrepreneur, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he start up a bunch of companies around these little projects that he does.
I don't think he's going to get that far.
As soon as they get too big, he's like, oh, someone buy this.
No, it's not about selling it. It's just about abandoning it.
Yeah, he's just going to make them till they get popular enough and then just walk away.
Yeah.
Like the Flappy Bird guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly like the Flappy Bird guy.
Man, that was a weird story.
It was.
And a terrible game. I did try to play it.
Just like that helicopter one that was, you know, all of those. Yeah. It's such a classic game.
Like the arcade game that you used to play in the fish and chip shop.
Yeah, totally.
I just love to think of Notch just sitting there on the phone every couple of weeks with an offer from Microsoft saying that, go away.
Yeah.
And each time it was another, 250 mil each phone call?
Yeah.
Well, apparently he said from the beginning, if you want to buy, they've been trying to buy Minecraft for a long time, and he said from the beginning, if you want to buy Minecraft, it's going to cost you $2 billion. And then apparently, you know, thinking that it was this ludicrous sum and they'd never actually pay it, I guess. And then I guess they decided to pay an extra 500 mil on top of that.
Yeah, probably because when they finally came to pay the $2 billion, they went, changed my mind.
Yeah.
But what's the point? Like, I don't know what anyone's saying. I haven't bothered to read any of the articles. But what's in it for Microsoft?
It earns $100 million a year.
Does it?
Yeah. Yep. It takes a long time to pay off. It's active accounts as well, right?
Yeah, and they have, they haven't just bought Minecraft, the game. They've bought Minecraft, the IP.
Yeah. So all the ridiculous, like my children have paper Minecraft. There's Lego Minecraft. There's a building block game of a building block game.
It's very meta. I mean, there are heaps of soft toys. I mean, I know a 12-year-old kid who has like a Minecraft backpack and he wants like a lamp for his bedroom. And, you know, kids are really into the merch side as well. I have considered buying some myself, so I shouldn't say kid. But it's definitely a huge business, even setting aside just the sales of the game.
See, I remember talking to Morgan about Minecraft when it was quite new, and he's like, oh, you know, it's kind of fun. And I was like, oh, yeah, I bought a copy. Probably, I think, maybe even while we were talking live on Discourse, I went and, you know, paid my $5 or whatever it was. And I own a copy, and my kids play it, and I have never once played it.
That's like my entire Steam library.
Yeah, well, that's also my entire Steam library.
The only time I play Minecraft is when I had to go onto the server that we have and tell off children for griefing each other. I just kind of log in occasionally and yell.
Wield the ban hammer.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is probably actually a pickaxe.
The ban pickaxe, yeah.
My children watch far more Minecraft videos on YouTube than that's amazing to me than they actually play Minecraft.
That's how I am with DayZ.
Well, there's a lot of, apparently, I'd never thought about it before, but a lot of people are like, you know, getting to these points in the game can be really boring. Like the Minecraft ones, people have built these insane worlds with like theme parks and roller coasters and
recreated King's Landing and
all sorts of stuff, and you're like, well, I don't want to do that, but I'll watch someone else wander around it and show it to me.
It must be an easier way.
So there's an interesting thing though. There's a new startup, if you want to call it, or lesson thing, where basically they teach kids to program through Minecraft, through kind of basic stuff like Redstone and things, but then also how to mod Minecraft and how to learn scripting languages and that sort of stuff. And it's like a weekly course where they can learn that stuff. It's quite neat.
Is that just for getting engagement with the kids, that's the way to go, but in terms of actually learning to code at all, that seems like a really difficult way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's very specific. Yeah. So.
Well, it's not, you say that though, but as soon as you learn any programming concept, like once you start to learn the idea of, you know, of variables and loops and conditional evaluations, all that stuff, you know, from that point onwards you can move forward in any language in any direction, really.
Yeah, but you're learning them using Redstone.
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but sure. Take your word for it.
I think the Redstone bit is actually learning about how circuits work.
Yeah.
It's not so much about the programming, but about you make circuits within the game using Redstone.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could learn how to design, like using logic gates, some sort of silly circuit. I think you're probably right, but I don't know. It seems really difficult to me. And if... I'm not going to suggest anyone should stop trying to teach their kid early, but anyway, needlessly enough, my son has not played Minecraft.
Oh, I'm surprised to hear that.
Because I'm a terrible, cruel, mean, and evil father.
You probably
go ahead.
I was going to say, you're probably limiting him to like an hour's computer time a day?
Well, he gets about 3 hours TV time and he gets about an hour and a half of computer time. And that has to be for like all his emails and stuff. So he has to get everything all done at once.
And the whole time he's chucking down fruit juice, right?
Yeah. He didn't really like fruit juice until I started adding just a few tablespoons of sugar into it.
That's always
just a few tablespoons.
Yeah.
Yeah. A few tablespoons of sugar really helped the juice go down.
Like just enough that you could see them not dissolving anymore in the bottom of the bottle.
Supersaturation. That's the way to go, right?
Yeah.
That was how I liked my Raro when I was a kid. Yeah.
I just put too much sugar in it, doesn't get
through
my hand.
Put too much sugar and it doesn't get through the teats in the bottle. You know, that little seen kids drinking Coke out of, you know, bottles. I'm just like, fuck, stop.
Did anything else happen since the last discourse?
Many things have, actually, but I'm just reminded that Siobhan told me she didn't want to hang around forever.
It's because I'm a nana.
Are you sure? What are your grandkids up to?
Is it not because you've got to go and play The Sims?
No, it actually isn't. It's because you know how there's like night owls and morning people? Yeah. I'm like somewhere in between where I like to go to bed early and then get up late.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like your style.
It's a good life.
Yeah, I wish I could do that, but I can't go to bed early. Actually, before you go, what's your favorite game lately?
Well, I have to say Destiny, I guess, because that's what I've been thrashing. But I've also been playing XCOM Enemy Unknown a little bit, which I didn't pick it up when it first came out, and people kept telling me that I had to, and eventually someone actually got me hooked, and pretty keen on that game right now.
Great game.
I'm enjoying Prison Architect.
Oh, I haven't played that.
Oh, I had to pick that up.
you don't need to. It's a time suck. I stopped playing it, honestly, but I'm still enjoying it. There's still a game ready for me to return to. I just am using a lot of self-control and not returning to it.
I'm not addicted to War Thunder in any way at all.
The last game I played was Railroad Tycoon or Sid Meier's Railroads? One of those.
Like Rail Simulator?
No, not that one. No, it's the Sid Meier's. You know, it's one of the ones where you build the stations and the tracks and then you schedule the trains and add more. It's Railroad Tycoon, but I think it's the newer one. Sid Meier's Railroads, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And I played that about 3 months ago, and that's the last game I played.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
But since then, how many games have you bought on Steam?
A few.
Yeah.
It's one of the two games on Steam I have installed. And I uninstalled it, I think, recently.
Siobhan Keogh, thank you so much for joining us.
No worries. Thank you.
You're listening to Discourse.
Now it's just
us on Discourse. We still have Ben. Ben's a guest.
Is Ben a guest?
Yep.
We must have let our standards down.
I was waiting for my intro. That's why I wasn't saying anything.
We're joined by Ben.
Hollywood Ben Gracewood.
We're still very professional on Discourse. I don't suppose either of you listened last week.
I did a little bit. Why is Ben joining us? Why is he here, Morgan?
Because he's going to be instrumental in the Discourse Votes election show on the weekend. He's going to be on the panel probably from about 7 p.m. probably until after 11, it turns out. We're all going to have iron butts together, and it's going to be absolutely jaw-droppingly amazing.
We should have at least 1 3-minute VT break, apparently.
We'll kind of a few. Yeah.
It depends on how much of our technology works, because there's... No, I mean, I'm not...
There's either a high chance of that.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously we've got the Wellington crew and we don't know if that's going to work at all. And we've got the mobile Auckland crew and we don't know if that's going to work. Mm. If both of those things do work, honestly, I don't know how we're going to fit everything in, and it's going to be easier on us than last time. If those things don't work, then it's going to be, you know, a challenge again.
Insane thing again.
Yeah, it's going to be wonderful mayhem either way.
Yeah.
If you're listening to the show and you're thinking, goodness, how do you go about making a live video podcast for no money, or live video webcast for no money?
Yeah.
The question is, the answer is, I don't really know.
Favors.
Yeah, basically, I know a lot of people who work in TV.
Yeah.
And so that gets me some cameras and some expertise. And I know some people who sell TV equipment. So that gets me some loan equipment from DVT. And then, you know, we call in other favors and we ask for a few things that really probably no one should give us, and they do.
Yeah. Borrow some fast nets and stuff.
Yeah. And then we just kind of sit down for a while and do the same bullshit we do on this show, but for about 4 or 5 times as long.
Maybe twice as long. I mean, it's only 5 hours.
Yeah, well...
Yep.
But the hard thing is that I insist on having some proper visualization of information.
That is actually vital. I mean, that is the thing that holds the show together. It would be, I think, impossible without that.
Well, so I've done, this will be the third one of these types of shows I've done.
Oh, yeah, you did the Triangle TV one.
The first one was in 2005 on Triangle.
It was terrible.
Of course it was terrible. There was no way we could have done the things we can do now.
Yeah.
We had three cameras, and I think maybe only one camera operator between the three cameras. Mm. So they couldn't, you know, you couldn't do much with them. I was directing and vision switching and trying to control, you know, trying to get the information. Whatever idea I had about how graphics might work fell apart instantly. The thing I'd set up so that I could speak into the presenter's ears and tell them information, that was just running through a channel on the mixer that I didn't have put into the mix, but it turns out it was leaking into the mix a little bit, so people could hear the instructions that I was giving them.
That's, you know, so pro. All that sort of stuff.
So that was yeah. crazy, and that was no budget. Then we did the one for the last election, 2011, yeah. Did nothing in 2008. Oh, that's right, I had a baby on election night in 2008. Oh, I didn't, but you know.
Please, no babies this time, Dylan. Without you, we would have nothing.
Seems unlikely. So last time I found some good software. There's a piece of software called Casper RCG, which is an amazing open source graphics program from Swedish state television, SVT.
Yeah.
Really awesome. The caveat, which is both its strength and its weakness, is that all the graphics is built in Flash. So basically what it's doing is it's taking Flash animation, so anything you can do in Flash, and it's playing them out a proper video, SDI video signal.
Is that because video graphics are still stuck in like the early 2000s?
It's the Bronze Age.
There are tools that are more modern, but basically when you start to get into things that are more complex than pulling simple variables from an RSS feed or something like that, like if you want to actually start to, you know, display understandable electorate information or have a ticker running across with electoral results, with electoral returns, that stuff you have to start going really bespoke. You have to start programming your own things, and then you're talking about OpenGL or God only knows what else.
Oh, geez.
But this thing uses Flash.
It's going to be exciting.
As the graphics layer, but that means I have to program in Flash.
That's great. And I can't wait to see your special electorate information around those electorates we'll be monitoring.
I will stab you in the face if you keep mentioning that, because... Doesn't exist, Ben.
No, it doesn't. But it doesn't exist. I think for people tuning in, we are going to have special coverage.
We have the same access to the information that TVNZ and TV3 have, so I have exactly the same media feed that the proper broadcasters have. So
yeah, but we'll be the only ones putting the correct spin on it. I mean, who's going to be tracking tobacco lobbyist vote counts and
no one. But the thing is, you can watch us and you will get useful information.
Absolutely.
At about probably the same time as the normal broadcasters, but. Probably slightly less informed opinions.
And better quality.
Hey, now, that's not necessarily true.
More beer, more than anyone else online.
Yep.
So, it's going to be totes or balls.
There is a lot of room for error, but any problem we have will be solved. So you can count on us. We'll be there for you.
Well, also, any problem we have will just add to the entertainment.
Yeah. That sure would be entertaining. Are you feeling anxiety at all?
No, I'm just feeling time running out. I still haven't tested anything.
Well, that sounds familiar. That was pretty much what happened last time.
Well, so the deal is that the guys I'm borrowing a lot of the equipment from are in Penrose.
Mm.
And I have to get out to Penrose sometime and set up a few things and test some basic stuff. Between now and Saturday.
That seems unlikely.
Well, it's not impossible. I think I've got a time I can do it, but it's just, you know, things keep getting in the way. Like,
it'll go fine. It'll be lovely. It'd be perfect. The worst that can happen is
that the graphics don't work, basically, because we know we can make the cameras go.
We can just get someone to hold an iPad up in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Yes, we can do that.
I mean, but surely you can switch to like a virtual camera on that's running on a computer somewhere. Because
I've got a bunch of ways to make.
So
it.
If we have to do all it, good. Then we'll just have information from a bloody website.
It's going
to
totes work totes.
Or we'll picture-in-picture TV3.
Yeah.
We'll be your second and third screen option.
That's right. But, man, politics.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of politics lately.
We can talk about this for ages, and I don't want to because I actually want to go in a little while. But I mean, there's no point talking about
it. I know what you're talking about. You're talking about this election is just, it's too close to call. And you know what? I'm hoping that Scotland vote yes.
I know. Although, you know, you think about the ramifications of that for Scotland. Like, it has a lot of implications.
None of that is anything to worry about. They were invaded and they've been occupied for centuries. centuries. It doesn't matter that it's going to be difficult. All sorts of things worth doing are difficult.
Well, we'll see what happens. It's interesting that they can now vote on this. They don't have to.
Well, there are a lot of fucking loafers in England that they're probably better off without.
And they've got, don't they have all the energy reserves and stuff up in Scotland?
All the oil is in their waters, their territorial waters. Yeah,
they've got all the monsters.
That's true. That's absolutely true, and that's a tourist draw card.
Probably 80 to 90% of the kilts.
And most of the what are those? What's that Highland grass called? Damn it! No,
bagpipes.
No, the grass, the like tufty grass that grows in the Highlands. That they've got that.
What are you talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about either.
Is it like shamrock or something?
No, shamrock's full of clovers.
Right,
clovers.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out. Do you mean? What do you mean, peat?
No, it doesn't matter. It's not important.
They've got great. Are you talking about marijuana?
Yes, marijuana. That's what I'm talking about.
It doesn't seem like the sort of country where it would grow very well. But I don't know.
I don't even know what I'm talking about. It's possible.
What are you? No, I need to know. What grass are you talking about?
Isn't there a name for the like the Highland tufty grass that
Scottish grass?
Don't think I haven't tried.
Flora of Scotland. The grasses and sedges are common everywhere except dune systems where marrow grass may be locally abundant.
Why is the internet
going to
know?
I need to understand. We've got to get
because
to the
when you think when I think Scotland, I think Highland tufty grass.
Yeah, that's all I think as well. Not whiskey.
No, not bagpipes.
Oh yeah, that would have been good. I could have. Yeah, they got most of the whiskey. Ah well.
Do you mean thistles?
Thistles? Maybe I'm thistles. I don't know.
Do you mean wood sedge?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Smooth meadow grass?
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
Early hair grass? Jointed rushes?
Yep, all those things.
The rushes.
Common cotton grass?
No, at some point, no. No, just moving on. Scotland, fuck them. They can do
it. Wait, slow down there, pal. Slow down, chap. I'm not sure about this fuck them thing.
Do they get monetary... monetary separation as well, or is it just governance?
Oh, this would be the no vote. The English government are promising that there will be further
devolution
to them. But the yes vote is that they become an entirely independent country called Scotland, and the United Kingdom ceases to exist.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah,
pretty amazing.
I'm all in favor of it. I think. Look, I don't have a dog in the fight. Any problems would not be my problems to deal with, right? But I feel like. They have been under the heel of those useless English idiots for too long. Also, it'll fuck up our flag, and that, I'm strongly in favour of that as well. Because the Union Jack doesn't make any sense.
The
blue and white diagonal stripe in the Union Jack. No, it's not. Is it actually called the Union Jack or is it Union Flag? Anyway, that is the Scottish flag in the background there.
Mm.
Yes.
Right. And so once that goes away, it's just fucking red stripes on blue.
Red stripes on white, blue. Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure the Union Jack ceased to exist.
I mean, surely it can't. I mean, they identify so strongly with it. But suddenly it would mean even less to us because it wouldn't even represent something that maybe it previously did.
Oh, my God. What am I going to have in my boxer shorts if we get rid of the Union Jack?
White whales. That was a very clever reference. You didn't get it. If I was Scottish, I'd vote yes, or perhaps I wouldn't if I actually had to deal with any of the repercussions. Other things that have happened was the internet party's moment of truth.
Yeah, not so much a moment, really, yeah.
God, more like approximately 300 million moments. Just...
I had it on the background while I was doing other things, and I did quite enjoy Greenwald, and I did like the kind of the surprise Snowden.
Yeah.
That was quite well done.
Snowden was great. Greenwald was good. And actually, what was his name? He had a funny name. Amsterdam.
Amsterdam
was all right as well. The person who was pretty bad was actually Kim himself.
Stank up the place.
Kim.com with his laughter and his weird advertisement for mega video conferencing. But Julian Assange, he didn't seem to contribute anything. He hung around looking kind of bored for a very long time, like Big Brother on the wall. And then there he was with his alleged unproven sex pest face, kind of just stinking up the proceedings. And it's, you know, some of the criticism from the press. Thankfully, they actually have moved on a little bit. So the press is saying this is not what Kim.com promised. He said that there was going to be signed affidavits. He said that he was going to blow the top off the Prime Minister's office. He said that he was going to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that John Key was lying about when he knew about Kim.com. And really none of that happened. There was this, almost everyone says it's certainly a forgery, this allegedly email between some Hollywood idiots.
Well, the thing about the email, right, is it could be real, but without anything to support it, the easiest explanation for anyone who's being honest is that it's fake because it doesn't look real.
Yeah.
I think like that, it doesn't read real. It's just way too convenient. It's too perfect. Everything's wrapped up and like there's nothing in the email that doesn't relate to what it should. You know, it's just perfect.
Yeah.
And you go, well, that's just too good. But sometimes things are, but there's nothing to support it.
Yeah.
And so they decided to give it to the Parliamentary Privileges Committee, which doesn't exist because Parliament's not in session, but the Speaker refused to accept it, apparently.
Mm.
So, but they wouldn't talk about it at the press conference after the moment of truth because it was apparently sub judice, which is bullshit.
Yeah.
And so now they get to put it out there, although apparently Kim.com didn't put it out there, so who knows how it came to the Herald. They get to put it out there. It becomes this big thing a few hours before the moment of truth. They don't address it at the moment of truth.
Mm.
Of course, everyone wants to know about it because it's the really simple scandal, not the spying thing is way too complex.
Yeah.
I mean, not that the media aren't giving it a reasonable go, but it's complex and a lot of people don't give a shit because they're like, well, security, you know what a lot of people are like on this issue.
It's the same way people are with police. So, I mean, some people just will not criticize police. They will not criticize intelligence because they believe the line. You know, we need to be protected from the terrorists, which no one has ever actually proven to exist in the country.
So entirely predictably, the moment this thing became an issue, the media are like, oh, this is juicy. Let's talk about this because this is nice and easy to explain.
Yeah.
And of course, predictably it sucks the wind out of it.
Yeah, and predictably is the thing is I unfortunately just completely rolled out the way I was expecting it, which was more of the same. You know, it's basically just Snowden plus, but not even that. It's just rolling out the same stuff that Snowden and Greenwald have been saying and Assange has been hinting at. All probably true, all pretty straightforward, but none of it is, you know, all plausibly deniable and nothing. No kind of shocking, irrefutable, crazy evidence. Yeah. And so it's all just easy to sort of wash away with, security and show me some proof. And it's just gone.
I get frustrated by my more rabid left-wing friends who are, you know, posting on Facebook and things. It's like, John Key will have to resign now.
Oh, yeah.
He said if it was proved that it's like, well, it hasn't turned out that he was lying because this isn't proof. You know, sure, it's probably true and the information is reasonably believable, but this doesn't meet that criteria. You know, this isn't like a video of him going, oh man, it's great, we're spying on all the people. Like, it's just sometimes I wish people would drop. I don't like ideologues of any stripe. I wish people would be willing occasionally to take a little more to take a more nuanced view of things and actually build up that Iron Man that we were talking about before, the Steel Man.
Yeah.
Wasn't because the whole
it's that thing, you know, I see these things and I'm like, well, I know exactly what the counter spin on this is, and no, it's actually not unreasonable. You know, the opposite position, while I disagree with it, is is not unsupported.
I suggest two things. Read the Andrea Vance piece on stuff, the Snowden files, and, you know, really everything that she's going to write about this is probably going to be equally good. And also read Key Things Project Spear Gun Underway post on public address. Those two things will get you well up to speed, I think, with the fact-based stuff, the provable stuff.
Someone's posted a little thing on Reddit as well, which has... Which has put together a few little bits and pieces that are relevant, including, among other things, that the Southern Cross cable went down briefly in November 2012, so like a month or 2 months after the spy bill was passed.
I'm under the impression, doesn't it take a really long time for those big fiber cables to resync? Like hours?
Who knows?
Other thing to think about, when the fact that came down and people kind of point at things, do you remember when Syria went offline and everyone said, oh, look, the Syrian government turned off internet access to stop dissidents in the country? Oh,
that's interesting.
Turns out that was the NSA installing some root software on one of their, one of the country's border routers and blew it up.
Right.
Took it down. That's well proved, and it's actually out in the open now.
So if they don't have that intelligence, how will they know where to drop the Ebola corpses?
What I'm saying is don't discount the fact that an NSA dude poking around inside a large router could take New Zealand's internet offline.
I heard that the Southern Cross cable went down because some unnamed company sent 2 million copies of U2's album to everyone in New Zealand.
I love
I've refused to start iTunes again since then. I'm not running it.
No, it's okay. It's okay, Dylan. There's the SOI removal tool. So it makes it sound like the SOI, SOI malware. And Apple have actually, the website is actually titled, it's on apple.com, SOI removal tool. And it's SOI is obviously Songs of Innocence.
Oh my God.
I think they did that deliberately just to sound, it sounded so, yeah.
So there's the other thing that this Reddit post mentions is that, and if you, this is good if you like, this is, I usually kind of despise this sort of thing in 9/11 conspiracies, for example, but that the company that was responsible at the time for doing some upgrades to the Southern Cross cable when the outage happened is a US company called Ciena, C-I-E-N-A, and earlier they had appointed a new member of their board, including the former director of the National Security Agency.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Hilarious.
Do these people not know about deniability deniability.co.nz/VPN?
So there you go.
I was going to change the subject, so don't carry on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say there was another thing that was posted, which I hadn't seen before, which was one of the full PowerPoint presentations from Snowden.
Those things are so hilarious.
They are. They're very strange. Can you imagine sitting in a room as an NSA analyst and being given that presentation? You'd be like, this is very strange. But it was quite interesting. It makes, if you look at it the right way and you think, you know, and you think, and you're slightly critical about the idea of mass surveillance and you look at it, you're like, fuck yeah, this is a bad idea, because it's talking about, you know, how do I find new targets, new suspicious people. It's like, well, you know, set up a search that looks for people in Germany speaking communicating in Iranian and using encryption. Like, and that's your terrorist suspect, and then you can do a targeted thing against them.
So there's this thing in the medical profession where they don't like to do unnecessary tests, unnecessary scans, because they will find things. There are things that happen in all of our bodies all the time. Like every one of us has probably had cancer, and our bodies just got rid of it, right? And if we had had scans I have not consulted with a medical professional to verify my statement.
No, you're onto it. I'll tell you why in a second.
Because homeopathy.
And if we had ever if we'd had a scan at the time when we happened to have, you know, a tumor somewhere, which our body consumed as part of its normal operation, the doctor would have said, you have cancer, here it is on the scan, let's start chemo or do some surgery, right?
Yep.
But your body got rid of it, okay?
Yeah,
so you don't want to get, you know, it's a genuine positive, but it's also very misleading. And so if you go fishing too much, if you search too hard, you're definitely going to find something. You're going to find an Iranian dude in Germany.
He's probably angry about the world.
Maybe he's angry about something. Maybe he's angry that he missed his bus, though. And maybe he's using encryption because that's the only way that he can talk with his mother back home in Iran without feeling like they're being bloody watched. Maybe they're members of some, you know, religious minority and they don't want to be persecuted at all. But, you know, you don't actually know about the deeper details. If you just go hunting for trouble, you will definitely find it. And as soon as you find it, things will escalate.
Yeah.
That's like...
No, you're right. On the medicalization thing, prostate cancer screening, there's been some research recently that's completely pointless because anyone who exhibits symptoms can usually get sorted out,
right?
And anyone who goes positive for the screening may not exhibit symptoms before they die of other natural causes,
right?
And so the kind of the treatment is much worse than the disease.
Yeah, than just not knowing about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also a YouTube video. It's called, it's by a lawyer and it's called Don't Talk to the Police. And the idea is that you should never talk to the police, even if you're innocent, because, you know, if they suspect you of something, because they suspect you of something. And you can unknowingly provide information that circumstantially ties you to a crime.
Yeah.
If they think they think you robbed a bank and they ask you what your activities were on a day and you say you drove past the bank, you know, you say you were in this part of town at that time, that then suddenly, you know, that says you would, it's an interesting thing about, you know, and it's against the mass surveillance thing as well, is that you don't know, you know, if you're looking at it the wrong way around, it's very hard to know what's what in terms of whether something really is pointing one way or whether it's completely not and coincidental, and of course coincidences are.
So stop looking at stuff, basically.
Yeah, stop doing stuff. The other thing about the phone, like capturing all the phone conversations as well, it was like that. I always thought that seems like a a futile thing for the NSA to do, and I'm not entirely convinced they're doing it because, you know, the technology for dealing with voice is nowhere near as good as the technology for dealing with data, with words and bytes and machine-readable information. So surely, you know, the bigger you make your haystack, the harder you make it to find things in it. The signal-to-noise ratio goes wrong, I would think.
But even if there are bad guys out there, I just really think there's not very many of them.
I think it's reasonable to have ability to target people when we otherwise, when we have some reason to think they need to be targeted. But just going on fishing expeditions, hoping to fish things up is just going to mean the wrong people get targeted. And, and also gives people a false sense of security. Well, and it gives people a false sense of security. You know, it'll give the security agencies a false sense of security. Nothing can go on because we would spot it.
Yeah.
We know everything's good. We don't need to do anything else because we're watching all this electronic data, and if something were happening, we'd see it.
We sit at the heart of the total perspective vortex.
Yeah. Anyway, something else. Anything else.
Advanced voting.
No. Well, okay. That's interesting. And I'll come back to my thing.
No. This afternoon, there had been just under 290,000 advance votes, which is extraordinary. The current projection is that approximately 20% of the potential electorate will have voted in advance.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so
that's quite cool. It means at 7 o'clock on election night, the minute the polls close, the results data comes out with 20% base. Well, not quite. You know, it'll come out with all the advanced votes that were cast before that day, basically.
Do we know where they're being cast? What they're, you know, what areas and stuff?
I actually don't know. Let's see. Elections do publish some figures, but I don't know how much they break them down.
Once the poll is closed, we could potentially find that out entirely. Like, you can look down to the polling place level.
Yeah.
But I don't think they will publish that information broadly.
I'm not seeing it quickly, so I don't know. Apparently, though, I'm going to be very interested to see what happens on election day, because the forecasts are for terrible weather in the south, and so that might have some effect there. But also, apparently, historically, early votes tended to be more right-leaning. I'm not sure if that's going to be true anymore, though, because the rules have changed. The people trying to get out the early vote appear to be Greens and Labour. I don't know if we can draw any conclusions yet, but it's going to be very interesting to see who is voting early, what the age of them is. Like, is this how the youth vote is going to come back, if it's even possible to bring it back? There's so many interesting questions that we're going to answer during the show on Saturday night. Anyway, Ben,
it'll also be interesting to see, you know, like how the vote, you know, in the opening minute, how the breakdown compares to the finished breakdown.
Yeah.
Mm.
Because right from minute one, we can posit what the makeup of the parliament will be. So we can see, you know, we could grab the first one and then, you know, skip to the end and see how close it was, because that'd be quite interesting.
Yeah. And there's some pretty interesting electorates as well. Like the Napier one's pretty hilarious with Garth McVicar. Evil Lord Darth McVicar turning up in Napier and stinking up the national electorate vote. And so much so that the guy's looking like he's going to lose the Labour.
Splitting the vote. It's fantastic.
But it's Stuart Nash, right? And I think it's Stuart Nash there, who's reasonably confident and has not taken a position on the Labour list.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't win there, he's not in Parliament anymore.
And the National list, you mean, or?
No, the Labour list, the Labour candidate there.
Oh, right.
I think it's Stuart Nash. I don't know.
Interesting. And Helensville, I mean, that'll be a tight race, right? With John Key running against who's he running against there?
Lila Hale.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That should go well.
Should be somewhere within 20,000 votes, surely.
Man, flipped at the post, eh? I bet it's going to be a photo finish, that one. All right, so I mean, that one's not really going to be one to watch, but there are a lot of really interesting electorates, because there's all these little parties that can make a big difference, and they seem to all be in really close fights. Like, I don't actually think that we can conclude what's going to happen in Epsom. It's probably going to go to David Seymour, but I think it's going to be closer than last time.
Me too.
Well, there's been a lot more, I mean, that I've seen, and I don't even live in Epsom, but there's been a lot more push from the left-wing parties to tell their supporters to vote.
No, there hasn't. Maybe not the parties,
but the people, within some of those groups, there's been
lefties. Yes, the parties. No, certainly not the Greens. They are to their detriment. I think they are taking the high road on voting for who you actually want to vote for and not being strategic, which I think is really silly. I think you should vote as smart as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Because I mean, why wouldn't you?
It's almost the argument, of course.
I'm so worried about the Conservatives getting over 5% that it's maybe start to wonder. wonder whether I should, you know, geez, should I vote New Zealand First or National or something just to keep those guys out?
You know that you voting New Zealand First or National doesn't affect the Conservative Party vote, right? Like, so, unless you were going to vote for the Conservatives as some sort of crazy joke, but you're like, oh, no, maybe they'll get over 5%. Your voting for National or anyone else doesn't change the Conservatives' percentage.
So there are, I've got a big list of things that I want to track on election night during the show. And one of them is something I've called the Grace Wood proposal, which is the idea that everyone can technically encourage their grandparents or other out-of-touch relatives to vote for Conservatives. In the hopes of them hitting 4.9%.
Because it's 4.9 wasted percent, right?
But being
wasted
extremely careful somehow.
Well, it's
to not get over the 5% threshold.
So, unfortunately, what happens though is that basically any of the people who don't make it into, who don't deserve a seat, so anyone who doesn't win a party, who doesn't win an electorate seat, or doesn't cross the 5% threshold, is discarded when we do the calculations, right? So then all that happens is that we take all the votes that were received by parties that qualify for a seat, and we redo percentages off that.
Yeah. So it helps the lower percentage, right? So it helps someone like the Greens get one more seat than they would have otherwise, because their percentage is
votes away from National. But if we're voting for the Conservatives in the hope of spreading the vote more widely to, I don't know, then it may not necessarily work, because it only, maybe it does. It's complicated. I had to learn about the Saint League,
the Dunning-Kruger effect or something, was it?
That's the formula that they use for allocating seats.
All right, okay. Hey, there's one more thing I wanted to ask before you guys wanted to wrap up, didn't you, or something? But last week, you know, I listened to the show on Thursday after Apple's announcement, and you guys talked about the things that Apple had announced. I thought it was really prescient. You'd listened to the announcement and reviewed that and decided on what your opinions were, and
they definitely released some informed
feedback.
The thing was smaller and larger, and it had a material.
It had
a price.
And some people wanted it, so that was good.
Yeah.
Some people were excited.
4 million pre-orders in one day.
Now what we didn't do though was
that's amazing.
For some reason last week we didn't think to touch on the U2 thing, but I guess it's because it's just not really relevant.
Yeah. Right. I didn't know there was going to be such blowback. I was really excited to receive that for free.
Why has no one focused on the U2 finger touch, the U2 and the Tim Cook finger touch?
It's so weird.
That was so disgusting.
It's so weird. And it's like they got it, like, I don't know which one of them got it wrong, but whatever it was they were meant to do.
They were going for a handshake or a high fist bump or something.
Fucking bizarre, man. Phone home. Elliot. Elliot.
It was the most creepy, weird thing of the entire presentation.
Do you want to briefly turn this into a tech podcast?
Oh, if you want.
So what size are like the Samsung Galaxy S4 and 5? What are the size of those screens?
5.5, are they?
No, that's the Notes, isn't it?
Oh, really? Is it that big?
I think the 6 Plus.
The Note 3 is 5.7.
And the 6 Plus, I didn't realize it was that big.
Yeah,
the 6 Plus is...
It's the size of a Note. It's too big. Okay, but the thing I want to get at is that, like, when I saw this, it's a pretty cool looking phone. It's going to suck, I think, oxygen out of iPad mini space. We're going to see, I think, a big drop in sales of the iPad mini, because why would you buy an iPhone and an iPad mini when you can just get an iPhone 6 Plus?
Have you not met Apple users?
I've met heaps of Apple users, and they're humans, and most of them are actually practical people.
I know a person who owns an iPad, an iPad mini, and an iPhone, and an iPod.
No.
But they don't own an iPhone 6 Plus, do they?
I saw the cutouts of the 6 Plus put on top of my iPad mini. It pretty much covers the screen of the iPad mini.
Yeah. Really the point I want to get at is that the smaller one, the 4.7, I think, is it?
Mm.
The screen resolution is really low. So the Android phones of that size for like the last 2 years have been all 1080p. Yeah. And the iPhone is... this, whatever that fucking stupid resolution, the Retina Plus, whatever non-resolution it is.
Mm.
It's really weird that they've finally managed to catch up to the size, but they've got a lower resolution screen. Yeah. It's bizarre.
And also the use of the screen real estate with icons, it's really...
They're so big.
It's really starting to grate. It's,
yeah. It's I saw that. I saw that someone did an illustration of the iPhones next to each other as they get bigger, and it's like, wait a second, there's the same number of icons. They're just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. So the iPhone 6 is 750 by 1334.
Yeah. So it's 720p screen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much.
Except it's that sort of thing where it's a little bit bigger than 720. So if you're playing a 720 video on it, it's going to scale it up by a very awkward amount that can result in strange things happening.
I was really underwhelmed by the watch. Really?
Yeah.
Compared to the Moto 360, for example, if Moto 360,
but you can
that.
Touch it and send your heartbeat to someone.
If the Moto 360 didn't have that black bit at the bottom of the screen, it would be walking all over everything else. Except they've got a really shitty processor in the thing, and questionable battery life. We don't know what the battery life is of the Apple Watch.
It'll be atrocious.
Yeah. The battery life though of the 6 Plus is like the standby time is. 10 days.
Oh, that's the main reason for going big in phones these days is that, you're not going to, the screen, but you're going to fit a lot more battery in the phone. That's the reason why they've had to go big.
Yeah. So I'm in this slightly strange position where my next phone, it will maybe be exclusively selected by the quality of the camera. Because I want to be able to take cool pictures of my kid wherever we are. And I don't necessarily want to have a real camera all the time. And I have a feeling that that's going to mean getting an iPhone.
Yeah, the 6 Plus camera will be stonking, almost guaranteed. Because even the 5S camera is amazeballs compared to anything else that I've used.
The camera in my S4 is disappointing.
Yeah.
I have to say.
You look at the reviews of all the nice new Moto X and everything, and the camera's about half-assed in that too.
Yeah. I don't see that there's any excuse for it.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I think it's probably one of the hardest parts of the phone, though. The camera. I mean, that's some complicated. You're putting an awful lot of. You're demanding an awful lot of an incredibly small sensor and some very microscopic optics.
If you look at a blow up of the new camera in the iPhone 6s, there are a lot of lens elements in a very small space.
Yeah, exactly. They are teeny, and at some point, I don't know. I don't know how you can expect to get or what you can expect to get from something that small realistically.
Well, in the iPhone 6 there's a bulge for the camera. It's not flush with the back.
That's weird as well.
Yeah, it's a funny sort of a thing. I don't know what's going to happen there. I might have to get an iPhone, or who knows what's going to happen. Do you think there's any room for smartwatches?
I don't see a use case.
A gadget expert.
I own a smartwatch, bitch.
Yeah. Do you wear it? No. I did rock a Fitbit for a good 6 months, and so I can see, given that it's a Fitbit plus, it's a Fitbit plus, it does a lot more than that. There's probably a class of people that will wear it, but I've just got to the point where I'm sick to death of notifications on my phone anyway.
Yeah, it's too many.
So the last thing I want is them more accessible.
And three bloody things, have you stood up and sat down enough this hour, and have you accelerated to a quick walking pace frequently enough in the last 25 minutes, and did you shake more than 3 times the last time you weed?
That would be amazing. The other thing is, I watched the iPhone, I kind of, the Gear 2 that I've got, is it a Gear 2? It is a Gear 2, isn't it? The things it does well enough if you want to use them. And then there's I've seen someone I work with has a Pebble, and it's a little bit better.
Pebbles.
Yeah. But it does those reasonably well. And then you look at the iWatch, Apple Watch, what's it called? Apple Watch, but you can't type it because it's a character that doesn't exist.
You can type Apple, APPLE.
Yes. The Apple Watch. When I saw the video demos, I saw a few of them, and I was just like, this is too much. You have to remember to, you tap this thing this way, and then but then again, I've sort of said the same thing about, tablets in the past as well.
That's exactly what I said when I saw it as well. There's so much what they call mystery meat navigation, where it's kind of it's not clear. You have to kind of.
Yeah, you want to get these apps, you can kind of zoom into it, and then you can spin around this bit, and then if you hold it like this, it goes into this configuration mode, and then you can change the color and tap it over here and do this and and then do this other thing and then tap this. Just like, fuck all that.
Yeah.
Just fuck it all. Like, it's, I just want to watch with a nice calculator on it, that's all.
Yeah, from Casio.
Yeah, so I can watch, so I can write boobs and
stand,
you know,
by
shell.
Better Life for 3 years.
They will sell millions of them, right? Oh,
of course. Absolutely. They will, and people millions. Will wear them for like 3 weeks, and then they'll be like, oh, this is actually, it's kind of, it's not as comfortable as I'd hoped, and
I think it might be similar to the iPad, where it's kind of, you know, you look at the iPad graphs compared to the iPhone, it's you know, there was a big jump at the beginning, but it's tailed off in a big way. It's nowhere, it's not tracking the phone sales in any way.
Well, I don't think people keep up. I don't think people feel as compelled to upgrade their iPad. Yeah. As they
frankly,
do.
I feel like people use their phones more often than iPads now anyway, because the phone's got bigger, and so why use an iPad?
Yeah.
So I would like to move on. We're no longer a tech podcast. So everyone's heard of the Finnish baby box, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So finally, a New Zealand political party is proposing that we have a similar thing in New Zealand. It's Green Party.
Bloody good idea.
Bloody great idea. I'm a little bit worried that they aren't quite getting one part of the reason for the success of the Finnish baby box. Is that it's beautifully designed and it's full of really excellent things. I'm a bit suspicious that the New Zealand version is going to be a bit shit, and it's really important that it's not shit, because
the Greens wouldn't let it be half. You know, they'd have New Zealand made. You know,
they'll have free range, organic, wind blown, hand picked.
Well, it's to start with the
sustainable cotton or something, right?
The well, of course, but the other thing is that the bassinet thing. What are they called? I don't know. It's a flax basket to start with, which, like, I'm not opposed to that, but it seems like, you know, it's nice and stuff, but wouldn't it be easier and stuff, you know, there must be easier, yeah, simpler options. The other thing, you know, I had a flax bag around for a while, and I don't even, it smells.
No. Yeah. Frankly. And what's the organisation that's come out against this? Whether
well, let me just tell you some other opinions. No.
Is that what they're called?
I would like to tell you my other opinion on it. Like, I think, frankly, that this policy is taking nanny state to a new level, but it indicates just how much the Greens want to intervene in family life. It's a complete waste of taxpayer money to give nappies, bibs, blankets to millionaire families and other families who are able to cope with those needs already.
The point is that it's not a stigma. If everyone gets it, then no one will feel like they're a charity case for receiving it. We can all buy these fucking things, but there are families who need them far more than we do. And make it good enough that everyone wants it, make it good enough that everyone uses it, and then there's no kind of judgment. It's like one of the very few reasons, I think, that schools with a uniform make sense, because there's no fucking judginess.
Sorry, I just want to say that I made a mistake, though.
Yeah.
I just realized the words I just said.
Yeah.
They weren't my words. I'm sorry.
No, I know.
No, I just should point out. I accidentally read Bob McCroskey's words and thought they were mine.
Oh,
his organization is called, I'm sure it's called,
Family First New Zealand.
Right. Yeah.
But not all families.
Fuck your family, right?
Fuck you. It's called fuck families.
Fuck
I hate
families.
Yeah.
Why would children need a warm, safe bed?
The headline of their press release is Greens take nanny state to a new level. It says this policy is simply.
I don't want to talk about. I don't want
to
talk about social work.
Dylan,
please, can we not talk about family first?
No,
they're not interesting.
Well,
unless you want to do the steel man form of their argument, which I will still find unconvincing, I bet.
Well, the steel man form of their argument is simple. It's really that why give something like this to people who don't need it but that's the stigmatization you're talking about. Why give this to someone, people who don't need it, when you could focus instead on the people who really do need it? Same thing, the argument with the school lunches, you know, we can just help the people who need it.
My only concern is that the items will not be of sufficiently high quality. I saw a picture that had two things that I could have, that both of them could have been considered to be a flax basket. One of them looked good and one of them looked shit, and I don't know which is proposed to be in this package.
Well, and they want to make how many, 50,000 a year, they think, so I'm not sure how good a flex basket you can make in that kind of quantities.
It should provide employment for lots of people.
I guess so.
New Zealand manufacturing, but it's not exactly high-end manufacturing, is it?
Well, no, it's hand weaving, I assume.
It's not high technology. Yeah, so I'm a bit suspicious about some of the details of this. I think they maybe lost sight of why the Finnish baby box is so cool, and if they half-ass it, it's not going to work.
Right.
But it will still be expensive. My very last thing, I promise.
Okay.
Last week I said that Doctor Who this season is shit. This week's episode is not shit. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I saw someone tweet about that and I thought, Morgan will feel like a dick now. Do you feel like a dick, Morgan?
No, I don't feel like a dick, but this is about the most Moffat episode we've seen in a long time.
I'll take that for whatever it means. I don't understand.
Yeah. All right. So, well, anyway, I'm done.
Hey, we'll see you on Saturday. If you listen to this on Thursday, tomorrow, but the next day. Saturday is the day after Friday, which comes after Thursday.
Friday.
7 p.m. The show starts on the dot, more or less, at votes.discourse.co.nz.
Yeah.
Or you can watch directly on YouTube, but the votes.discourse.co.nz just has an embedded YouTube player, so do it there.
By Saturday, there'll probably be a website there that doesn't suck, or it might be exactly the same as it currently is.
What's going to happen now on Saturday? Something amazing is going to happen between now and Saturday. It just feels like it.
It feels like someone said that after the election, we're all going to have to start taking acid so that we can continue to feel this kind of the sense of amazement at a world gone crazy. I wonder actually if the water supply has been dosed already and that's why it's so.
I was going to say the same thing. Like, are we all having a shared hallucination? Like, and suddenly someone was like, Eminem, and we were like, yeah, fuck yes. Oh my God.
Brilliant.
Fish and chaps, fish and chaps.
This show is cancelled. Beep.